Bears fans, I'm excited for you. I'm excited for you guys to not hate me this year because I'm going to have nice things to say about your team. And I just hope for really good football in the NFC North. I hope that your team shows up. I hope that it's not ugly. I hope you guys don't end up like the Jacksonville Jaguars did last year, where you guys just lost games you shouldn't have because I'm going to be betting on your team. And so when I put money on your team to win games this year, I'm riding, and I'm riding hard.
Hey, yo, what the f***?
I'm Kurt Benkert, and this is Pocket Presence, powered by Sleeper. Here we are. We're back with another episode of Pocket Presence, but I don't even want to call these episodes, man. These are case studies. We're deep diving into fan bases, favorite teams, and right now, we're going a little bit, I guess it would be southeast of Green Bay, heading down to Chicago, and we're going to talk about the Chicago Bears. And we're not going to talk about their new stadium. We're not going to talk about any of that stuff business-wise. We're going to talk about, can Caleb Williams be their savior? And why we think the Chicago Bears might not suck this year. Tyler, I know you've been anticipating this episode as a Green Bay Packers fan heavily, but I think this is going to be something that Packers fans kind of probably have in the back of their mind. And every offseason, it's like the Bears fans think that they're, you know, they're coming in hot. It's going to be a good year, whatever. This year feels a little bit different. I don't know if they've ever had a roster set in the last like 10 plus years that feels as ready to compete as it does today. And in my opinion, it all falls on Caleb Williams and his ability to translate into year one in the NFL in a really freaking tough division. And we're about to find out.
Yeah, I want to preface a couple things. Obviously, I'm a huge Green Bay Packers fan, so this is going to be tough for me because in these case studies, we generally try to be as positive as possible. I will take the role of devil's advocate here. We're going to be positive. At the end, we will have made the case for why Chicago, I mean, I'll say could make a deep playoff run this year. You know, I think that they have that kind of talent. Yeah. Along the way, I'm going to challenge you a little bit, Kurt. I'm going to play devil's advocate. It's just a Green Bay Packers fan in me. But I have to admit, even as a Packers fan, this is an intimidating roster. Like this is probably one of the better rosters, at least skill position wise, that a rookie quarterback has come into. Oh, and by the way, we're talking about one of the best rookie quarterback prospects that the league has seen. A lot of people are saying since Andrew Luck. So there's a lot to be worried about if you're a Packers fan. So Let's do a little, think about this Packers fans as a little reconnaissance mission. You're taking a peek behind the curtain. You're going to understand why you should be scared. And maybe in doing it, you can.
We're doing recon. Maybe not scared, just a little
more. We're
going to
keep an eye on it.
You know, like I think that the Bears, we're doing our due diligence for Packers fans out there. So I think this video will be very good for Packers fans. I think it'll be very good for Bears fans. I think it'll be very good for NFC North fans in general. And let's just talk about it. In recent memory, I don't know the last time that a number one overall pick was taken by a team that didn't suck ass, like heavily. And so the Bears are in a really unique position right now to have the number one pick, the number nine pick, use them on two guys that could change, like two by themselves that could elevate a franchise. I think Aroma Dunze is a stud. He's going to be a problem for a really long time. Caleb Williams can change a franchise. So to have such a deep draft, such a heavy skill position draft, and the fact that this is the year that the Bears got a number one and number nine pick, it kind of feels like if the stars were ever going to align for the Bears, it's this year. And I want to preface this by saying the Bears with Justin Fields last year, with very, very little help on offense at all, almost beat some of the better teams in the league and did at some points in the season. The Bears had the Lions on the ropes at the end of the year and blew the game. The Lions went to the NFC Championship not long after that. The Bears ragdolled a few teams early, midway through, got ragdolled. Like, you didn't really know, but the one consistent part about their team was their defense. Their defense was really, really good last year. They were top in a lot of different categories, yards. They had some good turnovers. Like, they were not a slouch defense. So Eberflus sticking around, like, that's kind of his thing. And I think they were smart to keep him around for one more year, knowing that they just really needed some offensive reinforcements. They went out and got him, dude. They got everything that Justin Fields wishes that he had during his entire Bears tenure, kicked him to the door, brought those guys in, drafted Caleb Williams, added Aroma Dunze, and now they're ready to compete right now. They do have some older guys on their roster, Keenan Allen, but Keenan Allen's got a lot of juice left. Keenan Allen, when he was healthy on the field last year, was balling. I mean, he had a 200-yard game last year. Like, he's no slouch. He's a dog. And his play style pairs up so well with DJ Moore. they're so yin and yang with how they play. And then you add a guy like Roman Dunze, who's a massive red zone threat, great stretch of the field vertically. And then, oh, wait, you have a quarterback. That's what he does best. Back shoulders, up and away. Like, he can push the ball downfield vertically. He can extend plays. You have a really unique recipe for NFC North disaster if they do what the Bears don't do best and not F it up. And they added DeAndre Swift, who is lightning in a bottle if he gets past the first level. So this just feels like one of those things of, like, don't sleep on them. You definitely can't sleep on them. All the other years where it's always the Bears year, the fans are excited about it, like, that's all just been null and void. This is the first time that I'm looking at them and I'm like, you know, they're on paper is a reason for them to make a run very similar to what the Texans did. And the Texans started off the year a little slow, figured it out, showed some flashes, and then they hit stride. And the NFC North, in my opinion, is a younger, identical version to the AFC North right now, where every single year, any team, except the Vikings, I don't think they're going to do it this year, can just take it. And it's going to be who goes on runs, who goes on stretches, who stays healthy. This division in the NFC North this year is going to come down to who does not lose the key pieces to their team through injury throughout the biggest portion of the year when you're in that NFC North battle in that stretch and you need to win those divisional games. Like, that's what it's going to come down to. This is going to be such a tight race, and I think the Bears are primed for it. I think the Lions are primed for it. I think the Packers are primed for it. The Packers still the youngest team in the league, like only one player over 30. I don't know, man. Like, this just feels like grab your popcorn. Nobody can predict what happens, but it's going to be a lot of fun, and nobody should be slept on in this division.
So we talked about it a lot last week when we talked about the Commanders and Jayden Daniels, and that, and obviously the Commanders, like, skill position wise, are way behind where the Bears are at. But you talk about the Texans a lot and use them as the case study for how teams should be going forward. If the quarterback works out, this is all going to fall into place. What can Caleb Williams do in this first year? Because I think he's a step beyond where the Texans were. That nobody was expecting the Texans to be good, and they came, they burst on the scene last year. The Bears, and whether this be because of their fans or the media just hyping them up, there are expectations on their team. So what can Caleb Williams do in this first year to make sure that it works out?
Caleb Williams, if he just takes care of the football, and I'm not talking about, like, don't throw interceptions. Like, interceptions are going to happen. I think to be a really good team in the NFL, you've got to be willing to push the ball downfield. And I don't think you can rely on 3, 5, 6 yards a pop at all. So what I'm thinking that Caleb needs to do is you need to push the ball downfield. Don't be afraid to make mistakes with the ball in the air. Don't be stupid, but don't be afraid to make mistakes. But at the end of the day, you need to limit the fumbles, because when he gets crazy, when he gets, you know, playmaker, tries to be Mahomes, tries to do this and that, sometimes it's awesome, but sometimes he put his team in really bad situations last year by trying to do too much on third down and not being willing to punt. He has got to be willing to let his offense not get the first down if it's not there. Don't force it if it's not there, and punt the ball, because you have a defense that you can rely on. And that is going to be the biggest thing for him. Caleb Williams has never played football in college where he has a defense that he can rely on and be willing to punt. A lot of times when he was playing, he had to play catch up. And if he did not score a touchdown on that drive, the other team was going to, and then you're down 2 scores. That's how Caleb has been operating since he's been in college. That's done. That's not the NFL. That's not the game. So you've got to rewire the hard wiring in your brain. That's how you play, and that's what makes you special. But you've got to be able to do what Mahomes has done. And Mahomes knows when to turn it on and when to keep it safe. And you saw that in the middle of the year this past year. Patrick Mahomes had a hard time playing safe football and trusting his defense. When he felt like the offense was sputtering and not doing anything, whatever, he tried pressing, and then he threw a pick six, and he threw another pick six, and then it's a fumble. You know what I mean? Like, that can happen to the best of the best. So as a rookie, you got to believe that that can happen to you and know that you can rely on your defense and you got good players around you. Play point guard and then be a shooter when you need to be a shooter. And that's what I want to see out of Caleb Williams this year.
There's an under-discussed aspect of this that I haven't seen a lot of people talk about, and it's that the Bears' new offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, who's coming over after 3 years in Seattle, was the man responsible for revitalizing Geno Smith's career. And to your point of playing distributor, Geno Smith last year ranked as the league leader in completion percentage, completing almost 70% of his balls. And in the 3 years that Shane Waldron was there, I think his quarterbacks were, it says, fifth in completion percentage at 66.6. So it's almost like
talking about
you get the best of both worlds.
That's like, that's,
yeah, you get the best of both worlds where Geno, maybe he's just a distributor, you know, a game manager, and that's the best he can be. If you could get Caleb Williams to be that, and then you also have this ridiculous arm talent and mobility that you could layer on top of it when shit hits the fan, that, like you said, that is the perfect pairing.
Dude, if Caleb Williams can just play point guard and distribute. He has all the tools. He has all the tools around him to be successful without having to be who he is. He can just be the bare floor of who he is, and they can be successful this year. If he can turn it on in the right moments at the right time, and like only when the risk reward is there, he can be truly special in year one. And again, that's a hard thing to navigate. Like, I've seen him do some crazy shit in college and their highlight plays. I've seen him do some dumb shit that could have been a highlight play that was a low light. And in the NFL, all of that's going to be magnified. So knowing what you have the defense, you have the skill players, you have a new scheme, you have a new like game that you're learning, because the NFL game is way different than the college game. The way that space is exploited is different. All of it's different. Just take it easy, take it slow. And look, dude, we've seen quarterbacks with very little talent athletically that are just distributors be successful year in and year out, and they have long careers. Caleb has the physical capabilities as a passer to have very little legs to move around with and be successful. He could be a successful pocket passer if he chose to. So hone in on that first, lock that in, be a good team player, be a good point guard. And then when you need to go be lightning in a bottle, when you need to go be Superman, like they call him, go be that guy in those critical situations, because he could be as special as he wants to be, but it's that fine line of navigating it. And again, that's a problem for the NFC North.
Kurt, you and Caleb both have a very interesting connection, which is you both played under Lincoln Riley. And you've talked a lot about when you were in school playing in this West Coast system, it was quite a learning curve for you once you got to the NFL. Like, you talked about you didn't even have a playbook, and then you get to the NFL and you have to learn all of this terminology and scheme and a playbook. What is that transition going to be like for Caleb Williams on his way to the NFL?
When you go to the NFL as the guy and you are the starter, the number one overall pick, everything is going to be catered to you, and the rest of the team is going to be waiting for you to bring things up to that level. So you're not going to get 12 deep installs with the deepest things in the playbook. Like, they need to get you ready to play. So they're not going to overload you. At least they shouldn't. I know some guys have had that happen. Johnny Manziel, we talked about it. And you should not have that happen. So when I went in, I was undrafted, and I got into a quarterback room with Matt Ryan and Matt Schaub. I had to learn everything that they knew on their like schedule of learning it on every install. And it was so easy to get behind because it's all brand new. Where for him, I'd imagine there's going to be a lot of RPOs. There's going to be a lot of quick game, a lot of like three-step and a hitch, some maybe pure progression reads here and there. But there's going to be things that allow him to dip his toes in instead of just being forced into the deep end of the pool. And that should help him so much. And again, coming from Lincoln Riley's system, Air Raid, Texas Tech, that background, it was very much like a verbal playbook where you had a lot of signals, you had formations, and then you basically signaled different plays or different route concepts based on side, depending on what the coverage was. But it was not like you had this written playbook that had this is this play, this is this protection, but like it was all very verbal. And you would, I had to like draw my own playbook in college because that's how I wanted to learn it, but I had to draw it to my own understanding. And when I had like freshmen come in that were trying to learn it all and there was no playbook, like I would lend them my notes, which was my version of the playbook, so that they could at least like chop off some of that learning curve. So it's very different. It's a different game. How it's coached is different. How it's playing is different. All of it's different. So that's what I really want fans to understand, is like the college game is one thing and the NFL game is another, and there's some overlap. It's very similar. Like CFL football is very different from NFL football. College football is very different from NFL football. Like, people just look at it similarly because there's a pipeline, but there's so many differences that change the game and how plays are called.
A lot of people have talked about, we knew Caleb Williams has been going to the Bears for months at this point. A lot of people have broken down what his ceiling is and what his floor is. I want you to contextualize this a little bit for us. Now that we know what team he's on, what weapons he has, what could his rookie season look like in the best case scenario, given the weapons and given the division? And what do you think the worst case scenario is for him? And maybe give us some comps on either side.
The toughest part about what he's going to have to deal with this year is the division he's playing in. And look, he played at Oklahoma. He played at Southern Cal. He's going to have to play some cold games. You know, he's going to have to play a lot of cold games. And he's going to have to go to Lambeau. And they're going to have to play in Mile High, like Windy City, whatever. There's a reason why there hasn't been a quarterback that's thrown for over 4,000 yards. It is actually windy. It's very hard. Look at Aaron Rodgers' production in his career, typically, beginning of the season to end of the season / December, when you have to be more efficient throwing in the cold. Most of the games are home games throughout his tenure in the playoffs, a lot of them. And it just is harder. It's harder to play in the cold. It's harder to play when it's windy. It's harder when you can't grip the ball as easily And those things matter. So with all that being said, the NFC North is a hard division to play in. And I know that the Vikings have a dome, which is great. And I know that the Lions have a dome, which is great. But the Bears don't have a dome just yet. And the Bears will, though, right? Business of sports. They're going to have one day. Do you think that them getting Caleb Williams and them getting a dome is not maybe somewhat related? They finally feel like they have their quarterback. I don't know. But I guarantee you that if you look at 10 to 15 years of Caleb Williams' potential career, his career will be better if they have a dome versus if they do not have a dome. Statistically, all of it. Like, that is, this is their best chance to have their next, their version of Patrick Mahomes in a city that wants football to be good. But I think that Caleb could have like a stellar, like, I think he could have a really good year. But I think that public perception of what a good year is not going to be the same where, look, he's playing in Chicago, man. It's a hard place to play football. Where if he was playing in the South and you were just in a dome all the time spinning around, like, yeah, he could have 300, 400 yard games passing if he played down there. But that's not going to happen much in the NFC North. It just, not late in the year when it matters. And when people are really talking about the success of your season, those things are in November and December. So I think his relative success is going to come down to his touchdown interception ratio, his fumbles that he does not have or fumbles given up. Like, I want to see how clean of football he can play, because we know he has the ability to do all the special things. So that is what I'm hoping to see. I hope that we see let me think of a quarterback. Dude, I could see his production being like a Brock Purdy production at the highest level, where maybe he doesn't throw for 500 yards, but like really good completion percentage, couple touchdowns every game. He's got a running game that he can rely on. Like, I could see him being like those things. Like, Brock Purdy didn't ever light it up numbers wise, but when you turn on the film, it was super efficient, super clean to watch. Like, that's what his vibe was. I would hope that we can see some of that out of Caleb. And again, Brock Purdy was the last pick of the draft in his draft class and had to play in his rookie year and led his team to an NFC championship game. So, like, let's not forget that rookies can do this. Let's not forget that CJ Stroud did it last year. Like, rookies can go in and play at a high level if they're in good situations. CJ Stroud was in a good situation. Brock Purdy was in a hell of a situation. And Caleb Williams is in the best situation the number one overall pick has ever been in. So I think that can be the ceiling. It can be very clean and efficient. But Caleb Williams year two should blow Caleb Williams rookie year out of the water. So let's give it some time. The floor, though, like, Caleb Williams is risky. And when he plays in that zone, he can be really risky and really sketchy. And the defenses he plays against in the NFL are going to be so much better than those Pac-12 defenses he played against. The DBs are going to be stickier. They're going to have more length. The pass rush is going to be incredible most of the time. Like, you're going to have to get the ball out on time. You're not going to be able to just bounce back there. Caleb Williams could look as good as CJ Stroud, or he could look as bad as we've seen Zach Wilson play, depending. I don't think it's going to be the latter. I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be good to above average. I hope. I hope for them. Like, they deserve a little something, right? Like, let's get some good football.
I won't go that far, but I do think the Brock Purdy comp is interesting. And I don't think a lot of people are going to like that. I mean, the interesting thing with Brock Purdy, we talked about it all last season, where it's like every game, whatever opinion you had of him going into that game, you could confirm after the game. You could say he's a good quarterback, he's underrated, and you could make that case watching his game. And you could watch the same game and say, no, he's overrated, like, he's way too overhyped. And I think the interesting thing about Caleb Williams is if he has a Brock Purdy stat line, but then he also has this, you have this context of like, well, he's the number one overall pick, he should have all this talent. Because I think that's what's holding Brock Purdy back, is the fact that he was the last overall pick. You didn't know about him in college. And so you have this bias that there's no way he can be good, even though he's producing and winning on the field. Whereas with Caleb Williams, if he has the same stat line, everybody's probably like freaking out over how good this guy's going to be.
You know, and Brock Purdy has made plays that maybe three or four quarterbacks in the NFL can make. Like, and that's a fucking fact. He has scrambled and made people miss and do all these things and throw bombs, like extended plays that not many quarterbacks can do while keeping their eyes downfield. Brock Purdy can do that, and he has done that almost every single game. He's had like a holy shit, that was a crazy play. But then you look at guys like you look at Baker Mayfield, and this is not a knock on Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield was number one overall pick, and Brock Purdy played better than him all year long. And Baker played really damn well. He just got paid. Like, Baker played well. But that similar mold, like the shorter guy that's kind of like scrambly, like makes plays, Brock Purdy is a more polished version of Baker Mayfield. And Baker went number one overall. So whenever Baker does something amazing, everyone's like, oh, Baker's back. Or like, just because Brock Purdy was almost undrafted, people are always going to hold that with him. We're like, that stuff needs to go, man. Like, Brock Purdy deserves to get fucking paid. And the 49ers would not have been a Super Bowl team this year without Brock Purdy. They wouldn't have been an NFC Championship team the year prior without Brock Purdy. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo was not getting them there. We saw it. Yeah. Like, come on. I know he's done it in the past, but when, like, Brock Purdy was the reason why they got where they were. And yes, he did need the help that he got. They would not have gotten there without Christian McCaffrey either. But let's just not act like if they removed Brock Purdy from the situation that some other random quarterback that's above average could go in and lead him to a Super Bowl. That's not the case.
All right, Kurt, this is the Bears case study. But I will enter into the record. We are now the preemptive Sam Darnold, Dan Quinn, and Brock Purdy podcast. We have added a third guy to our list of people that we will.
I might need to tweet about Brock Purdy on this random ass Wednesday.
I got a meme for you. You know the meme where it's like two people working at McDonald's and it's the guy and it's like broke, loser, doesn't have anything. And then it's a picture of a girl working at McDonald's that's like independent, queen, girl boss. I think if you drop stat yep. lines there between if you want to use Baker and Brock Purdy, I think that would play because yep. it's just the Mr. Irrelevant bias. Like, he's going to carry that around forever, and he might literally never shake.
He really might. I'm gonna go right now. NFL passing stats 2024.
I'm gonna say this meme.
Please do. NFL passing. Tua throwing a Tyreek Hill, 4,600 yards. Jared Goff, 4,500. Dak Prescott, 4,500. Josh Allen, 4,300. Brock Purdy, 4,200. 9.6 yards per attempt. Listen, like, Brock Purdy threw the ball 150. This is the clip. Let's think back to last year. Brock Purdy threw the ball 150 less times than Mahomes. 150 less attempts and had 100 more yards passing than him. Like, people want to talk about Brock Purdy in this light of he's been just, he had Christian McCaffrey, he had Shanahan, he had this and that. Like, Brock Purdy was the only reason they made it to the Super Bowl this year, because that playoff stretch was ugly. He saved their ass time and time again. And had they not had a guy that could move with his feet and scramble and create plays with his feet, that offense would have been dead in the water. They needed a guy that could elevate them. And I don't know, man. It's May. I want Brock Purdy to get a little bit of respect around here, and he needs to get paid. That's all I'm saying. He needs to get paid.
Let's get back on track here, Kurt. Let's go. Bears. I want to ask, this is going to be me playing devil's advocate. What would be the worst case scenario for how Caleb Williams performs in the context of this team this year? So I'll explain a little bit more. I think a part of the Bears' issue the last, call it 7 years since they drafted Trubisky in 2017, is they've gone through the cycle of draft a quarterback with a coach that's already on the hot seat, fire the coach, the new coach comes in, doesn't like the quarterback, drafts a new quarterback, that coach is already in the hot seat, and they've repeated this now three times. And we've done it again with Eberflus, yep. where I think people forget that he was close to being fired last year, managed to reel off a couple wins on some fluke Justin Fields rushing stats against teams that I don't even think were very good, and he managed to save his job.
Yeah.
And I'm worried for Bears fans that we're going to fall into the same cycle again, where Eberflus gets fired, Caleb Williams now has to go through a whole new coaching staff, and then the new coaching staff comes in and they want to draft their guy. So is there a worst case scenario? Because to me, it seems like if the Bears this year are average or even below average, but maybe Caleb Williams shows a little bit of promise, that all of a sudden Eberflus is out, there's a new coaching staff, and we just fall into the cycle all over again. So what is your thoughts on, like, worst case scenario this year for Bears fans?
Dude, the worst, okay, this is the absolute worst case scenario for the Bears this season. If they end up like the Jacksonville Jaguars of last year, that whole place will be ripped apart. You had Trevor Lawrence, who played in spurts well, but ended the year 21 passing touchdowns, 14 interceptions. He had a 65% completion percentage and just, like, did not play well. He made situational football blunders that ruined games that they had in the bag, that one of those games would have led them to the playoffs. If he just did not mess it up one time out of, like, the three or four times he did in two-minute drill or end of the game or red zone, whatever, then they would have made it to the playoffs. So nothing could be worse than if they go run-of-the-mill, middle of the road, 9-8, 8-9, have some flashes that they show, but then like make stupid mistakes on games that they should win and blow it. And they end up right back where they always are, right on the outside looking in at the playoffs. And then you have a coach that was on the hot seat last year, but they showed some promise. So, like, what are you going to do? You're going to just rip it all apart. Maybe their defense played well, so you want to blame it on a rookie quarterback that had some mistakes. Like, that's what I'm looking at that being the storyline this year. They were this close, but they need another offseason. But guys are going to need to get paid because their defense is playing well and then Keenan Allen's getting older. Like, if they just barely miss it again next year, that's the worst case scenario, because then what do you do? It's easy to blow it up if you suck entirely. But if you're 9-8, 8-9, and what do you do? Because you have to look at your division. And if they're 9-8 or 8-9, that means the Packers are probably, you know, 10-7, maybe 11-6. What are the Lions? Lions are probably going to be good. Lions are probably going to go to the playoffs. So this NFC North, dude, like, I don't see the Bears winning the division. So you're going to be playing for a wild card spot, presumably, and you got to win 10 games. So how are you going to win 10 games this year? We should go look at their schedule.
Well, honestly, we're going to get to that in a second, but I'm going to be sadistic for a second, because if they did the Jaguars season from last year where they started off hot, I mean, I think the Jaguars like playoff probability was above 90%, and then they just blew it. Could you imagine if that happened to the Bears this year, where they come out hot? So the Bears fans that have had the whole offseason to be like, we got next, like we're up, and they just get to ride that.
And then they got next.
And then it's just, they tank it. Next. Like, that, I think that would be, if they had the Jaguar season, that would be worst case scenario. And I don't even hate the Caleb Williams to Trevor Lawrence comparison. Like, both as a prospect, super highly touted. I think Trevor Lawrence came into a pretty decent system. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that would be, I think that would be worst case scenario.
I'm gonna tweet that right now. Will Caleb Williams be better than Trevor Lawrence was last year? Let's just poke the... All right.
Okay. I want to talk a bit about these weapons. So we have Rome Odunze, who they took with the 9th overall pick. We have Keenan Allen, who did have a great season last year. I think a lot of people forget how good he was last year. And then DJ Moore, who also had a fantastic season last year. It's a three-headed monster. How does this room shake out? Like, these are three guys who I presume to be alphas. They want to be the number one option. And so, you know, how do you see this wide receiver room shaking out?
Yeah. Dude, the Bears receiving room is disgusting. So this is how I see it going down this year. Odunze is going to need a little bit of time to just catch up the NFL game, but I think he can be a stud in year one. I think they're going to use him situationally, contested plays, you know, man-to-man, third down ops, red zone ops. I think that's going to be his thing. I think DJ Moore, they just want to get the ball in his hands in space. They want to get him bubbles when they're free. They want to get him screens. They want to get him slants. Like, they just want to get him running. And then Keenan Allen, let Keenan Allen get swifty. Let him cross zones up. Let him beat man-to-man coverage on zigs. Let him get behind the second-level defenders and get lost. I could see Keenan Allen playing very similarly this year in that offense to how, like, Travis Kelce plays, where there's some freedom to him. He's really getting scramble drill. They have some things dialed up for him and him specifically. And then let's talk about the other guy, DeAndre Swift, dude. DeAndre Swift as a pass catcher, when the Eagles wanted to use him last year, was crazy. He was so good. And the Eagles' play calling was abysmal. Their play design was abysmal. It all sucked to watch. I don't think they're going to have that problem this year, because they got their new OC, has done a really good job the past few years. I think it's going to look good. And I'm looking at this receiving room, like, is there a what's a better receiving room in the NFL? The Dolphins, probably, with Tyreek and Waddle and whoever the hell else they got. And then Odell just came there. So, like, that's crazy. And then you got, like, Jamar Chase. T. Higgins is still there.
I think he still wants to get traded, but he's still there.
Yeah, we'll see. So you got T. Higgins, you got Jamar Chase, Tyler Boyd.
I'm going to have to double check. I don't think Tyler Boyd is there anymore.
Yeah, I think he's gone. But like that's, I kind of look at it like it could be very similar to how the Bengals have been in the past few years. And then again, you look at the Texans, dude, they got Tank Dell, Nico Collins, Stephon Diggs. It's like kind of like one of those where Tank Dell is a specific type of receiver. Nico Collins is a specific type of receiver, and Stephon Diggs is the kind of like their Keenan Allen. So I am really excited to see how they scheme things up. I think sometimes when you have so many good players like that, it influences play calling a little bit, and you go looking for gold instead of just falling into it, where I think that's something the Packers have done really well. Like, they You don't really know who's going to pop off each game because all the receivers can play. All of them are a little different. Each one has their own little play design, but nobody's trying to get forced the ball. So, yeah, man, I'm like, the Bears shouldn't mess this up. They really shouldn't. They are loaded, but they're the Bears, and you just that when that first inkling of the dark cloud coming over starts to happen, it's very easy for teams to lose their way. Mm-hmm. And that's all I'll say.
I mean, could you explain more? Like, when you say lose their way, is it like, would it be a personality thing? And I'm not going to propose that we can.
Here we go again.
Okay.
Here we go again. Like, the mental psychology of being a part of an organization that's had some really bad losses, played for the Atlanta Falcons there. We had Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Devonta Freeman, Austin Hooper was balling at the time. Like, we had a lot of really good offensive weapons. Mohamed Sanu was a nasty third down receiver. Like, it just was, sometimes you get to a point in a game and it's like an unlucky tip pass or an unlucky like pop-up fumble or interception that like just was unlucky, and you're like, shit, like is it really about to happen again? Like, is this about to go down? And then all hell breaks loose. And I just think the Bears have got to find a way to get that bad aura of things in the past out of their way so they don't fall back into the here we go again.
Yeah, I probably helps with a new quarterback coming in. I just feel like there are certain people in the locker room that can help affect that change. And I mean, I guess like Keenan Allen coming from the Chargers probably doesn't help. Like, that's probably still sitting in the back of his
chargering
head. But when you have a bunch of young guys in the locker room, especially the quarterback, I can imagine that they come in, they're like, to draw an NBA comparison, I thought one of the coolest clips out of this weekend was Anthony Edwards sitting next to Carl Anthony Towns in a press conference. And Carl Anthony Towns was talking about how his last 9 years in Minnesota haven't been great, and so this really felt good. And Ant, who's sitting next to him, goes, like, fuck those 9 years. Like, we're here right now. And I think that sort of new blood, he's a young guy. He's like, I do not care,
you get that,
what it was like before we got here. We're here now, and it's going to be different. That's probably how you affect that change going forward.
100%. That's a great point.
Let's talk about the schedule. You brought it up. The Bears, per Warren Sharp, have the third easiest schedule this year behind just your Atlanta Falcons and the Chargers, who we just mentioned. And if you think that schedule difficulty doesn't matter, Warren Sharp does a really good job at projecting winning records. So he doesn't go based off last year's records. He looks at how teams are going to do this year, and it has proven to matter. So he broke down his analysis last year, and of the 15 teams predicted to have the easiest schedules in 2023, 11 of them finished with winning records. So if you have an easy schedule, it's going to make sense that you're going to win a lot of games. The interesting part was, of the 15 teams predicted to have the hardest schedule, only 5 of those teams finished with a winning record. And those were teams like the Bills, the Chiefs, the Dolphins, and the Cowboys. The Vikings were the final team. So teams that were already pretty good. I would not put the Bears in that Bills Chiefs category where they could overcome having a really difficult record. So
yeah,
it's going to matter for them. And in terms of making the playoffs, which I think would be the aspiration of Chicago Bears fans this year, of the 15 teams that had the easiest schedule last year, 10 of those teams went to the playoffs. And of the 17 teams that had the hardest schedule, only 4 of those teams ended up going to the playoffs. And so having an easy schedule clears your path. It certainly does. So talk about, you know, what that could do for a young quarterback, just understanding that, look, we're going to have a couple cupcakes here as the season goes on.
I think this matters. I'm looking at their schedule right now. They open up against the Titans. That should be a win. Then they have the Texans away, though. That's going to be a tough game. I'm going to just say an L. So 1-1. Then they play the Colts. I think they'll probably win that game. 2-1. Then they play the Rams. I think they're going to win that game. Their defense, I think, should stack up decent, and their offense should have pretty good ability to move the ball in the Rams. So that puts them potentially starting the year at 3-1. And I think then you look at their next few games, the Panthers. That could put them at 4-1. Then they have the Jaguars at home again. They start at home a lot. And so this falls into that category of, like, they have a lot of home games and they become road dogs. So then you have the Jaguars. Let's see. You have 1-1, 2-1, 3-1, 4-1. They beat the Jaguars at home. That would put them at 5-1. Then they go to the Commanders. And the Commanders is a really weird game. We got to know where the Commanders are going to be by week 6, week 7. But if we want to throw like a weird L their way, maybe we'll say they lose the Commanders. That would put them at 5-2. Still a crazy success to the start of the year. Then they have the Cardinals. I think they should beat the Cardinals. That puts them at 6-2. Then they have the Patriots at home, put them at 7-2. Then they have the Packers at home. I'm assuming all these are home games because it's saying that they're on the bottom. Like, they have so many home games in
a row.
That
is a big stretch. The Jacksonville game is going to be in London, but every time it says versus, it's going to be a home game. So they get the Packers at home for that first game, which is probably going to make a difference.
Yeah. And so what? Did we just say they were 7-2 at that point? Like, I could see them beating the Packers at home, but I could also see them losing. We'll give it to them. It's 8-2. Then they have the Vikings at home. We'll give it to them, like 9-2. Like, that could legitimately be a thing.
Well, I want to enter something in the equation here. We just talked about it with the Jaguars, where the beginning of their schedule is extremely easy. Like, we've talked about teams like the Titans, the Panthers, the Commanders, they have the Commanders, the Cardinals, and the Patriots, who are all teams picking 2, 3, and 4 this year in the draft. Like, these are not good teams. So the first half of the season is stacked. But then we get into, you just said, the Packers there in week 11, the Vikings in week 12. We start to get into a difficult part of their schedule. I would not be surprised if they come in having 8 or 9 wins and only a handful of losses. And then, I don't know, the shit hit the fan here once they start playing Detroit, San Francisco.
Exactly. And you look at it like this, that first begin, they've got to just stack as many wins as possible. And that's kind of the tough part, though. When the beginning part of your season is easy, but you have a rookie quarterback, you are fighting against the rookie curve, but also, like, you got to get as many as you can early. Because then you got the Packers, Vikings, Lions, 49ers away. Lions away. You have the Vikings, then you have the Lions at home, and you have the Seahawks at home, then you have the Packers last game of the year in Lambeau. Mm. Presumably, like always, for some sort of playoff implication.
It's going to be such a good game.
Their schedule is set up for them to have a Cinderella-type Caleb Williams first year, which would be good for the NFL. It'd be good for Chicago. It'd be good for ratings. It would be very good for all things media. But holy shit, is it also prime for them to fuck it up? They should have enough wiggle room by the time they get to their hard stretch of the season that they could fuck it up and still go to the playoffs. There's no reason they should have more than 4 losses by the time they get to, let's see, by week 10, they should have no more than 4 losses. That would, like, if they're 6-4 heading into week 11, I think that'd be like a failure for them, given what their schedule is. They're 7-3 heading into week 11, they're all right. Like, and that should give them enough wiggle room to squeeze out in the playoffs. But that gauntlet's going to be real, man. Like, and it's going to be a different brand of football. And you also can't afford to F up one of those games against, like, the Cardinals or the Patriots, or, like, because let's not forget, the Patriots defense held good teams like 3 points, 7 points, 10 points a couple times last year, where, like, if they just get lucky, they can win games. So, I mean, it's the NFL. Anybody can lose any Sunday. It's any given Sunday, but the Bears schedule, plus what they have, all of it, it matters.
Well, and you brought up an interesting point there, and I just think of the Packers season last year where they spent the first, like 9 weeks of the season just figuring out their identity and what they wanted to do on offense. And then they finally kicked it into high gear, but it was only when they literally could not lose another football game that they decided to start winning games. And here, sure, they have the Bears have a bunch of easy games at the beginning of their season, but like you said, if they stumble a bit, which is to be expected with a new OC and a rookie quarterback and a bunch of new weapons, like, their schedule gets hard at the end of the season. So they can't afford to drop some of these games that they probably should be winning at the beginning of the year. It'll be interesting to see how fast they figure it out.
Dude, I'm excited to see it because, like, I'm also excited to see, like, the implications of some of these future bets. Like, I'm going to start looking at some of these lines now. Like, you give a nugget that looks like 15 teams with the easiest schedule, 11 of them made the playoffs last year, 10. I'd say if you put $100 on every single 15 of those teams, it's probably profitable.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean? Like, I'm always looking for those types of opportunities. So you bringing that up, adding in with my preconceived notions about some of these teams. I think it's about time we start diving into some of this stuff, because you look at it now and where are they? Chicago Bears. Their odds to make the playoffs are positive. Like, they're -125. Like, Vegas thinks they'll make the playoffs this year. And you look at the Packers -190 to make the playoffs this year. Vegas thinks that Packers, Lions, and Bears will all make the playoffs this year. There'll be 2 wild card teams coming out of the NFC North, which is kind of what we're alluding to right now. Like, I think that's going to be the case. I think the Falcons -300 to make the playoffs. Wait a second. Maybe I was looking at it wrong. Oh no, yeah, we're good. And you look at the Tennessee Titans odds to make the playoffs. plus 425. No shot. Like, I just, dude, there's a lot of juice out here, man. Lions minus 225. There's definitely implications to be had, guys. And I'm not going to say I'm high on the Bears this year. The Bears should be a good team this year. The Bears should be a team that teams don't want to play this year.
Yeah. Let's flip over the defense side of the ball quick before we end here.
Yeah.
That was the strong suit of that team last year. I think that's why Matt Eberflus kept his job this year, because of how strongly, especially at the end of the season, their defense performed. They bring over Kevin Byard after a somewhat lackluster year in Philly, but obviously they had the sweat acquisition from Washington halfway through the year.
Yeah.
Maybe talk about it first in the context of Caleb Williams. What does it do for a young quarterback to have a defense that is that solid?
Dude, it changes your decision-making all game long. When you have a defense that you know, if you punt, it's not a bad option, that changes everything. You're not so stressed on third down. You're not so stressed in the red zone. You can, like, yeah, you want touchdowns in the red zone, but you don't have to be stupid and risk an interception because you need 7 points. You can take three. You can take three times in a game and win games consistently doing that. So it just takes the edge off when you have a defense that you know you're not going to get into a shootout with. Your stats are going to be better when you have a good defense because you're not making as risky plays. Like, there's just a lot that comes into play with having a defense that you can count on. And then when you add in their defense, dude, like, look, you got Jalen Johnson, you got Kevin Byard, you got Montez Sweat, you got Tremaine Edmonds locking down the middle. Like, you've got a lot of guys in a good scheme that is their scheme is recurring. They don't have a new DC, so everything should get a little better this year. And they were a force, man. Some of the games they were in, they were just hitting the shit out of people. They were showing up. They were, if their offense could do anything last year, they would have been a problem. And so, I mean, you flip it to the other side, dude. And I even forgot about Cole Kmet as their tight end. Like, I know he had an injury at the end of last year. Caleb Williams, DeAndre Swift, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze, Cole Kmet. Damn. Like, across the board, those names look good. I'm sure they'll play good. And if they can just be put in the right positions at the right time with a good defense, like, they've definitely built the roster that people hope to have. Like, if you give this same roster to, you know, Shanahan or somebody like that, they're going to be a playoff team. So Bears coaches, Bears organization, this is your chance. Don't fuck it up. Your time is now.
Do you feel the pressure is more on the coach, on the players? Like where do you think, like, who is this? Make or break year for it. Is this an Eberflus year?
This is a make or break year for Eberflus. The fact that Poles was able to swindle the Panthers he did and like put this roster together the way he has, Poles has done his job. Now, Poles also, I don't know what the breakdown is on who's hiring who is as the coaches and whatnot, but if Eberflus cannot put a product on the field that the entire state, entire city, all of it is proud of, he is out. And it's going to be over. So make the playoffs, keep your job, and we'll see how it plays out. And again, I just think that's what Bears fans have been missing. Bears fans have been missing a product on the field that they're happy with, that they're proud of, a product that doesn't shoot itself in the foot, a product that doesn't write its own death sentence. Bears fans want a playoff team that's at least in the dance. And if they get first rounded, they get out in the first round and they're a first round exit, they'll be happy. They were competitive. They want good NFC North games that come down to crunch time and come down to Jordan Love making a play to beat you, or Caleb Williams making a play to beat them, or Jared Goff making it. Like, everyone just wants good football in the NFC North. And with this roster, the coaches should be able to find a way to just give a good product that makes the playoffs, whether they win in the division or are a wild card. It doesn't really matter. That whole entire top three teams in that division are going to come down to who has things go their way. Who calls the right play at the right time in that right day at the right situation as the moon's going over the sky at the right time. Like, that's the type of year it's going to be in the NFC North. And I think that's what Bears fans want. Give them something to be proud of with a roster that they already should be proud of and just go play ball and see what happens.
I don't mean to get ahead of ourselves if I'm speaking as a Bears fan, but how exciting would it be for them? Let's say this year doesn't go according, like, I almost feel like the best case scenario for the Bears this year is that Caleb Williams plays well, but Matt Eberflus, just for whatever reason, looks like a total dope. And the next year they get to hit the hiring cycle of like a Bobby Slowick or a Ben Johnson, and they get to bring a real offensive guy in here to take over what you said, which is like a fantastic sports car that maybe Matt Eberflus just doesn't know how to drive. I think that could be dangerous for the rest of the NFC North, but that's maybe also getting way ahead of ourselves. Like, maybe the Shane Waldron, Matt Eberflus combination is the is the D'Amico Ryan Bobby Slowe combination of last year. Like, it's a model that's proven to work. So I don't know, but I'm just thinking, like, I feel like the first sign of peril for Matt Eberflus, these fans are going to be thinking like, oh my gosh, all these great offensive coordinators that didn't take jobs this year, like, they could be ours. Cause this is a prime setup for somebody to take their first head coaching job.
And that's kind of where I'm at. Like, if the Bears don't make the playoffs, Eberflus is probably out on verdict of there's going to be some good hires coming up this next year. And maybe Waldron pops the hell off with the quarterback, right? Like, maybe he pops off and they go crazy and he gets the job. Like, who knows? But if they're not a playoff team and Eberflus cannot show that he can be the guy that leads them and they want to fight for and they want to do this, that, and the other for, they will replace him, because we've seen crazier things happen in the NFL. And this one, if it doesn't go as planned in Chicago, is the lowest hanging fruit of all time to make a change. So good luck, Eberflus. I think you'll do a good job. I do. I'm not gonna be a hater. I'm not gonna hate today. I'll hate during the season, but I think he has shown enough competence on the defensive side to be able to let that drizzle over into the offensive side and make a difference.
But I agree.
Bears fans, I'm excited for you. I'm excited for you guys to not hate me this year, because I'm gonna have nice things to say about your team. And I just hope for really good football in the NFC North. I hope that your team shows up. I hope that it's not ugly. I hope you guys don't end up like the Jacksonville Jaguars did last year, where you guys just lost games you shouldn't have, because I'm going to be betting on your team. And so when I put money on your team to win games this year, I'm riding, and I'm riding hard, and I'll be there to see it happen with you guys.
I love it. I was going to ask you to give a little inspirational speech, but putting your money on the line for this team, that's as inspirational as it gets. I love ending it that way.
I'll be betting on the Chicago Bears this year versus shit teams. You can book it.
I also don't hate the idea of looking at
at
the easiest strength of schedule and seeing how much money you'll make by the end of the year if you're to bet on all those teams to make the playoffs. And of course that's baked. Of course that's baked into the Vegas lines. But I bet you're right. Even at like minus odds, I bet it could still be profitable just in aggregate.
Nothing would be crazier than me putting like $10,000 on the Chicago Bears to make the playoffs this year, and I gotta ride it out with them at -125. You know what I mean? Like, if the Bears, see, the thing is though, if we're looking at the schedule line by line, and the Bears start the year 7-3, 6-4, that's not going to be -125. That's going to be -150, -200, whatever. So like, I love the Bears at -125 this year to make the playoffs. I think that's good bang for your buck. Where you look at some of these other teams, like the Cincinnati Bengals are -225. The Bengals still have to go play Baltimore. They still have to play the Browns. I think the Browns are going to be a problem this year. I think Deshaun Watson, if he can play how he did in that last game that he got hurt that everyone forgets about, Deshaun Watson is going to be a sleeper this year in fantasy.
That might have to be our next episode. The Browns are a really interesting case study of like...
Browns, next episode, we'll be seeing
you. All right, next week we'll be back, maybe with the Browns. We're going to do this every week until the season starts. So a team that you might find interesting that we haven't yet thought of, let us know in the comments, because we got some off season to fill, but these have been a lot of fun.
Dude, I love these so much. It feels purposeful, impactful, and I love giving a little bit of hope back to organizations that typically could use it. And Bears fans, hope you accept this on a golden platter. See you next time.